welcome to the Adam Fitch podcast. I'm your host, Adam Fitch. If you don't know that by the title and the fact that this is the 10th episode, then there's something wrong with you and go get yourself checked out, basically. Today, I am joined by somebody who's quite nervous about actually speaking to me. I don't know if it's me or the concept of just speaking in general. So what I'm going to do is flip the script on its head and get my guests to introduce themselves and what they do.
I don't mean to be nervous about talking to you. I think we've had a little chat. I'm feeling a bit more relaxed. I'm Mitsuko Anderson. I am the campaign manager at Code Red Esports. And thank you for having me on, Adam.
No, it's
and
okay.
Trying to alleviate my nerves. I think it'll be fine. We're getting there.
Okay, so what's Code Red Esports for a start? Like, what does the company focus on?
So Code Red Esports, we kind of do a lot of different things, but kind of three main things to kind of flag up. Kind of first and foremost, we're a boutique esports agency specializing in consultancy. So kind of reaching out to brands, kind of chatting with them about how can they get into the space, what should they be doing in the space, and how to kind of go about it authentically. Secondly, we do sponsorship brokerage, working with some private equity VCs, stuff like that. And then kind of the probably what we're known for a bit more is our we are the agent for a number of talent, broadcast talent, and then influencers and to a lesser extent players as well.
Okay, so you say you're the campaign manager.
Yeah.
So say I know nothing about anything. What does that entail, and how long have you been doing that job? Because I'm pretty sure you just got the new title, right?
Yeah. So I got the new kind of title at the beginning of this year. Good start to 2020.
Too right.
So kind of what I do is a bit of everything. Kind of reaching out a lot to influencers, helping them. But in terms of kind of what the campaign in my title stands for, when we're kind of setting up campaigns for brands, whether that's they've come to us with a pretty set idea of what they want, mm-hmm. or whether it's they have no idea whatsoever and we kind of are a bit more creative.
Yeah.
What I do is work on creating and executing those campaigns. And then if they come with us, come to us with something more specific, it's making sure that those run smoothly, kind of giving some advice, picking up influencers for those campaigns. That's kind of one big chunk of it. And then the other side is working with the influencers that we represent to manage the campaigns that they do, even if those aren't ones that we've set up or ones that we haven't designed ourselves.
Okay. So what we'll do is we will go back and I want to know personally. I have no idea. How did you get to the point of joining Code Red? So like how did you discover esports? I guess, and then yeah, how did you get to the point? What do you do at university? Was it something esports related? And I was seeing those coming into play or marketing, blah 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 blah. You know. So what's kind of your story into esports up to Code Red?
So I don't think my story is particularly exciting.
Everyone says that, by the way.
Well, we'll find out, I guess. But I actually started out playing League of Legends when I was doing my GCSEs. So I don't know how many years ago that was now, like 8 years ago, maybe. It was my first kind of PC game, I guess. I never really was into that kind of stuff. And then got to kind of A levels and started getting really interested in watching the pro scene, watching Twitch streamers playing League, but didn't really kind of take it too seriously, I guess. It was just something that I had as a hobby. And then I went to the University of York to do English literature,
okay.
Not related to sports at all,
right.
But joined the gaming society there, where I met a lot of my really, really close friends that I'm still chatting with on Discord every day, and got very, very involved in that society, got onto the committee, and then we started looking more closely at esports. For example, I'm not sure how much you track uni esports stuff, but we did Roses, which is the kind of varsity tournament,
right.
At York. Against Lancaster, and we kind of did the first ever esports varsity competition,
Okay.
which was like an official thing. It counted for points, and a couple of other people that had been at SATI before were really instrumental in making that happen. But kind of being a part of that made me realize that esports was something that I actually cared about and something that maybe could be a career. But at the time, studying English literature, wasn't really sure how that would tie into things. I was thinking about journalism, but I'm not the best kind of journalistic writer. I can write, but just I'm much more of a let's write a massively long essay about something. So decided to do a marketing master's at the same uni, and around the same time, I was interested in working for the Newell because I'd played in some of their competitions at a very, very low level.
Right.
The Newell being National University Esports League. I think they're just Newell now. And yeah, kind of wound up in a marketing role there. I won't go too much into detail because I think I'm just rambling on at
No,
this
no, no,
point.
no, no. I'm interested. Like genuinely, like not many people will know this stuff. Like my audience, and it's always interesting to see how people get into the positions they're in now.
Okay, if you say so,
Yeah, of course.
I'll try and kind of elaborate a bit more on this stuff.
Sure.
At kind of the point that I joined the Newell, there wasn't really someone doing marketing specifically. Everyone, I mean, it was mostly volunteers at that point, working really, really hard to make sure that competitions were being set up, and that students were being told about what the Newell is. But when I was brought on, definitely was a lot of stuff to do. I was running the social media, and oh, I don't know if you heard
Have you
that,
done
but I'm
something
really
wrong
loud
there? Are they after you?
now. I hope not. They've just gone past. I think we're safe. But yeah, kind of running the social media, and I think back then it was CSGO, League of Legends, Overwatch were like the main three games. I know nothing about Overwatch. I kind of followed CSGO at that point, but having to kind of give updates about games as they were going on when I didn't really know much about them was very difficult. And a lot of long nights staying up to watch games, trying to follow things.
I know
And
that
then kind of
struggle.
it was an interesting sleeping pattern at some points. But yeah, kind of got a lot more into trying to put together strategy as well. But because there weren't that many of us, and all of us were kind of having to take on a lot more work than we would do within, I guess, the confines of our role,
Yeah.
it was very difficult to kind of actually put together big plans. But again, that made me realize that I liked that kind of strategic approach to things, as well as getting kind of hands-on. So kind of following my time there, I think it was around a year that I worked at the Newell, and
Right.
then did my dissertation, which I decided to write on esports. And then after that, I also was kind of looking for a marketing role, but something that was at a kind of more advanced level than when I was doing stuff at the Newell, kind of something that would enable me to look for those kind of more strategic, kind of bigger plans, I guess,
Right.
whilst also having, yeah, the ability to kind of get my hands on things and be really kind of in the mix.
I get you. So do you just find Code Red like that and apply, and Ben's like, yep, let's bring you on instantly? Or I imagine it didn't go quite like that.
No, it didn't go quite like that. I actually found a job on Hitmarker. I think it was Hitmarker or it was Rex, one of the two,
No,
you know, the team name on.
Hitmarker, it's Hitmarker 100%. We love you, Rich and Phil
Oh
over
yeah,
at Hitmarker.
Hitmarker,
It was
there
Hitmarker.
you go. Thank you, Hitmarker.
There we go.
Yeah, kind of saw that job. I'd heard about Code Red Esports before because mainly of Paul Redeye being associated with it. And obviously he's a massive figure in kind of esports and specifically UK esports community.
Yeah.
So I was like, they seem legit. And the role was really, really something that I was interested in terms of having the marketing, but also kind of doing stuff with influencers and talent, which I hadn't really had the opportunity to do before that, but something that definitely interested me as something that was becoming of increasing importance in esports. So yeah, had kind of wrote my cover letter, sent off my CV. I think one of the big kind of selling points for me was my dissertation that my thesis that I did for my master's, which was completely about esports. Mm-hmm. So send that as well. I was like, if you want to read my dissertation, enjoy. It's like 100 pages of stuff about esports.
I can't imagine Ben's going to read 100 pages worth of anything. But
well, it wasn't. I don't think Ben's read it, but Luke, who also works at Code Red Esports, was the one to interview me and the one that was really interested in my dissertation. So I had my initial interview with him, and then my second interview was with Paul, which I was terrified about. But they're all really, really lovely people, Luke, Ben, and Paul. So yeah, they made me feel very comfortable very quickly.
Has anything changed as such in your job since when you started to where you are now? Obviously, with the title change, I guess that's classed as a promotion, right? So, what kind of responsibilities have you taken on that you didn't have initially? Would you say?
So kind of even from when I joined, I would say I was quite nervous. That seems to be a running theme in a lot of things that I do. But definitely nervous about talking to talent, talking to influencers, kind of being more proactive about sales, or dealing with kind of inbound inquiries, just because I didn't want to give the kind of, I don't know, the wrong answer, I guess. And same with, I think a lot of times in esports compared to other industries, stuff to do with how much to charge or budgets or what's kind of the benchmark rate for stuff isn't, I wouldn't have known that until I got into this job. So kind of answering things about that or trying to negotiate things was something that I wasn't very confident about. But now obviously I've kind of developed those skills. I know kind of what is right, what is wrong. Speaking to influencers is a daily part of my job now, so I'm not terrified.
You realize they're just as big nerds as everyone else, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're just people. So yeah, a lot more of that, a lot more kind of chatting with potential clients, as well as kind of kind of more outreach than just getting down to work, I guess.
Okay.
And also, of course, more public speaking in my role as well now.
We will get to that later on. I do want to get to that in a bit. Once you're less nervous. But no, so say I'm like the next up and coming like caster or host, right?
Yeah.
What would I gain from like signing with an agency?
Yeah.
Especially so Code Red, obviously you can speak from experience there.
So I deal less with talent than Ben does. Ben is kind of the go-to guy for broadcast talent because he has so much experience in it. But definitely I can give some insight here, just from kind of dealing with them myself, but just to a lesser extent. Mm-hmm. And of course shouting out Ben for being a wonderful guy to deal with broadcast talent. So yeah, there's kind of a lot of things that agencies should typically offer and that we offer. I'm sure it's quite similar with a bunch of them, obviously depending on, I think having that kind of personal connection and knowing what you want from an agent is really, really important.
Of course.
But if you're kind of getting into the space, knowing your worth, knowing your value, having someone to deal with contract negotiations. So there is that kind of someone kind of acting on your behalf, knowing what you should be getting, but also having to deal with kind of more difficult conversations that you might not want to be having as talent. I think the major one is knowing your worth and making sure that you're not undercharging, and making sure that you have the kind of right expectations, knowing what moves would be kind of a good next move, a good next step in your career. And then also, of course, a lot of agencies will have kind of connections to like tournament organizers and the right people to reach out to kind of help you make that transition into something bigger.
Okay, so say Okay, well, one thing I've noticed is people of all levels, but especially the ones starting out, feel like they need to legitimize themselves instantly by signing with an agency, something like that. So say if I'm just starting out, say right now today, I decide, you know what, I'm gonna try and become an influencer, or I'm gonna try and become a host or something like it. Is it beneficial for me to be signing? Is it realistic, one, for me to be attempting to sign with an agency? Number two, is it actually going to be beneficial for me, or do I kind of wait it out until I get to a level where I need someone to step in and handle things for me?
I mean, I think that's a very good question. And personally, I think definitely kind of waiting out is a better way to go until you have kind of a clear goal and a clear, you know what you want, you know what you don't, you maybe have your own experience with talking to brands. But I also think on kind of the flip side, as an agency, we want to be able to help the people that we represent. And if it's that you've only just started out and you don't necessarily have a clear brand, you don't necessarily have clear goals, it's very, very difficult for us to then kind of translate those into sponsorships, partnerships, or, you know, just kind of leveling up your kind of influencer career, I guess. So I think it's something that, you know, everyone says, oh, you need an agent. And I think it's true once you kind of get to the point that you do need one. But when you're starting out, I don't know, I think just kind of work on your content, enjoy kind of finding what you want to do, finding kind of your voice, and then look for an agent when it comes to brands are starting to approach you, or you're getting to the point where you think that your content should have sponsors, should have partners. And I think even if you kind of are at the stage of maybe you want an agent, maybe you don't, just reach out to them, you know, try and have conversations. Because I mean, I know for sure that if Ben or I chat to potential influencers, we're gonna be straight with them about, you know, you know, come on board. Or maybe it's at the moment, no, but mainly because we want to be able to help you, and we're happy to have, you know, chats with you until you're at the point where you can be represented. But I don't think you necessarily have to sign on that kind of official kind of you're represented by us now level. I think there's a lot of, well, something that I like about esports is that there are people that are willing to kind of just chat with you and kind of help you out at those early stages, I guess.
Okay, well, I'm looking to get a bunch of Dad Hat sponsors, right? I've got a few free ones, but I'm after loads. I've got a couple of podcasts. Don't know if you knew that. I write a little bit as well. I'm not very
Well, let's
vote.
have a DM me after this. We can have a chat
Okay.
about your race. See,
Okay, so
get
would I be
your
able to
hat sponsored.
officially call myself an influencer if that was to happen?
Officially, to be honest, I don't know about the word
I mean,
influencer.
either. That's what I was going to bring up
So,
next. Like, what
yeah, I had a
qualifies
feeling that's the way you're leaning.
someone of influence? Like my dad's an
I think,
influencer then because he's got
yeah.
influence over me, for example. You know what I mean? It's a weird one.
I think the term itself is very, I don't know if it's a term that I particularly like using. I think it's a term that's become very standard across industries, not just esports, like whether that's beauty or fashion or something. Influencer has just become the kind of the go-to word for stuff like this. I can't remember who it was. Someone put up like a poll about what should influencers be called, and I think that personality is probably a better word in my opinion. I think, yeah, as you said, like influencer is just so vague, but it kind of has a, or it has come to have a kind of general meaning in society just based on what people believe it to mean. So, but yeah, it's just kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of words and their connotations and stuff. I don't know if you'd be able to call yourself an influencer, I'm
Fuck.
afraid. But you can try. I mean,
Who's
there's nothing
can stop
stopping
me?
you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. Like,
exactly.
if I have influence over one person, then technically, I just don't go around calling myself a public figure or a personality as such. And at that point, I'm probably like yeah, just kidding myself at that point. So, are there major ways for agencies to stand out? Not obviously not just in esports, but like if so, what are they? Because to me, it's like if they're all offering the same kind of things,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe relationships is one of the key ones I can think of. But yeah, like how would you say agencies can stand out from one another if they're offering the same kind of services?
I think it's becoming more of a crowded space now, or at least there are more people starting up agencies, more so in North America. Mm. And
they're not even licensed half the time, but
but yeah, like there are certain people that, I mean, yeah, offer kind of similar things, contract negotiation, like essentially managing your career for you. I think a big thing is, obviously, I want to big up Code Red, but I honestly think that just it's worth reaching out to a few, and you should own it's that kind of, you know, one agency might be super formal and maybe that works for you, like mm-hmm. you don't really want someone that's like a best friend, I guess.
Yeah.
Others might be very casual, and you know, the conversations that you have, you can chat with them about career, you can chat with them about personal life. You know, it kind of depends on what you're looking for in an agent and in an agency, their kind of company culture. But I also think that having an extensive kind of black book of connections, you know, knowing what, or even just whether that agency represents more League of Legends talent or more CSGO talent, kind of where, if they've got a history in what you want to do or the kind of field that you want to go in, or have a history with brands that you're particularly interested in working in. It's those kind of small nuances and small differences that can, I think, make an agency stand out.
Okay, so both in my job as a journalist and your job working at Code Red, it seems like networking's a big part of it and having solid connections. So I've always, I'd probably say once every 3-4 days, I'll have someone reach out to me and say, how do I get started? How do I do this? How do I reach out to people? And it's, for me, I just tell them, like, find their email and cold email them. Or literally just go on Twitter, and if you can DM them and try and provide some value. Is that literally, do you agree with that? Am I missing something glaring there? Because it's something I get literally, it's getting towards a daily occurrence now, where people are asking me how they can message people. And to me, it just seems self-explanatory, right?
So I mean, I'm not getting it daily, but I definitely have had people kind of message me saying, I want to get a job in esports. How do I get a job in esports? And for me, it's also pretty self-explanatory. It's not something that particularly came into my head when I was looking for a job in esports. You know, you have to be proactive. And if people ask me, I'm just like, well, yeah, be proactive. Just, you know.
They've started it by messaging you, right? They've actually started getting it right.
I think, like, you, if you're messaging someone, you have to go in with, you know, don't just be like, hello. You have to go in and say, I'm interested in X. Please can you tell me about why, or
yeah, don't waste people's time.
Yeah, exactly. If you open a message and someone's just saying hi, or like, I want a job at esports, then
get fucked.
I think it's I don't. Well, I mean, I've probably been saying
I've
nice about it, but
yeah, you're nicer than me.
They're like students, because I'm kind of very excited about student talent kind of coming through and finding their way, finding jobs that they enjoy. Particularly in esports, if we can have, you know, people that are excited about business coming in on the business side, or the creatives coming in at graphic design, videographers, stuff like that. But definitely not wasting people's time, especially if it's someone, I don't know, like if you message out the CEO of a company or something like that, are they going to read your message? I'm not sure. But if they are going to, then at least kind of reach out with clear intentions, be very, very specific, be very clear. But yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you just need to put yourself out there and pick up experience, you know, wherever you can. I know that there's a big kind of debate every now and then about volunteer work in esports. Personally, I think it's, if you can afford to do it, then you should do it. If you're actually interested in making those connections and picking up experience, might as well just go for it, honestly.
I agree. I mean, I tell people, probably don't quit your full-time job unless you've got a very healthy bank to back you up. But like doing it in the evenings and stuff, like what do people do in the evenings? They watch Netflix and I'll go to the pub or something, you know, like that. There are more, if you really want it, then you should be willing to do the bits and bobs to get there, you know. But one thing, when you say about students in esports, right, it's probably every other week at this point. I'm on calls with people or answering emails, actually like helping them out with the projects. So they need to speak to people. And I guess I'm just like, I'm small enough to where I'll respond, but like I have a voice. So like they're coming to me for that. It's not like I'm the most authoritative voice in esports, you know, but like, so yeah, they come to me, they come and ask for me to contribute towards whatever project they're doing. I don't know. Yeah. And then I never went to university, by the way. So I have no fucking clue about any of it. And and they'll say, oh, we just want to ask you a few questions, and then we'll use that in this piece, I guess, as dissertation or thesis, whatever it may be. And I'm fine doing that. It takes about an hour each time, which is quite a long amount of time, right? I never expect it to be that long. I'm thinking, 10-minute call, answer a few questions, we're done. Yeah. And then I never hear from them ever again. Like, they'll be like, okay, no, that's great, thank you, bye-bye. They'll hang up.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I don't know if I've just like done someone's entire job for them. I don't know. And are these people actually students, or are they just
you know, your free information?
Exactly. They're trying to write an opinion piece and ain't got opinions, so they're coming to me or something, because they know I have. I don't know. It's a very strange one. Like, I'm very happy to help out, and hopefully a few of those people over time will find themselves in esports full time, and you never know what can happen from there when I won't even remember who they are and they're the next big thing. That'd be great, you know. But like, also, yeah, it's just like, it is almost like a value thing, as you say. If you reach out to someone, you kind of want to provide them with value. My value is hopefully helping them out, but also it's like, bloody, I literally never hear from them again. I don't know what's going on. I'd actually like it if a couple of them messaged me every now and then, if they just had a question or they wanted to just shoot the shit about a particular game, as long as it's not like a MOBA, you know, because
my thesis, I had to reach out to or get answers from a lot of people in esports to kind of form the kind of preliminary research for my thesis, and I was very lucky in that Twitter is like the best place to get people to do stuff.
The best.
So kind of, and the fact that I had people that were willing to put their time into answering a questionnaire and stuff, but at the same time, I think it is important, if you then put in time to that work, not only is it good for the people that have put in time to help you to then see it released, or at least know what's happened to it, but it also helps you and your profile to put it out there and people know that you've spent time doing something. If it's an academic thing, for example, you're using your academic time to kind of work on esports, and you're showing that you have an ability to write, you have an ability to research, you have an ability to actually dedicate a certain amount of time working on a project. I think as a kind of a CV thing, I guess, it's very useful. So I'm surprised that the people that you've helped out, I guess, haven't kind of jumped on board that train.
Well, I don't know. I think expecting people to actually use their brains in today's age is quite a harsh expectation. And a lot of time, like, people just don't think, like as you said, like, Twitter's so useful. If you're messaging me out of the blue to find out how to message someone else, then there's something missing right there, because it's just like, well, you can just message them, like, you've just done it to me. And I know I'm not a red eye or a nature or whatever, you know, but like, I think it's kind of silly to expect to speak to them instantly, you know, anyway. So I don't know. Right. Well, what I want to do is split up the serious talk with something a bit less serious for a second, because I need to understand it. Right. So you say League of Legends is your game, the game that got you into esports and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm coming from this from an angle of, I want to like it, but I just don't understand the appeal of it. Can you explain to me a little bit as to why it's a game that, do you still play it to this day, for example?
Yeah, I still play it, but
okay,
way
so,
less.
Okay, so why do you play it and watch it?
Well, I have no idea how I started playing League of Legends, because it's not the easiest game to get into.
Yeah,
and
I was playing like Habbo Hotel and RuneScape when I was starting out, you know?
Well, RuneScape, yeah, but I mean, I'm not sure about Hover Hotel.
Club Penguin.
Oh yeah, Club
There we
Penguin.
go. They're real games, not these MOBA things, you know.
But yeah, I don't know. I think the kind of it was very difficult to get into League of Legends. I was terrified when I first started playing. But at the same time, it felt a lot more accessible in terms of I already liked kind of fantasy elements and that kind of, you know, play as a character kind of thing, which I think appeals to a lot of people. And then watching the pro scene, even when I was terrible at the game, was quite inspiring because you see so many things that you just wouldn't think of, or especially like hearing casters speak about the game, you're just like, I have no idea about most of the stuff in this game. Yeah. I think it's kind of set that kind of bar pretty high, and you know there's so much that you can work towards. I never really got into FPS games. I think if I had done at an earlier age, I probably would have been really into CSGO, and I probably, if I'd got into CSGO, I don't think I would have spent so much time on League of Legends.
Right.
But I also have the issue in CSGO of needing to use voice chat, and I don't particularly enjoy that experience.
Right.
Whereas League, obviously, it's just you can ping and you don't really need
Is that because there's a bunch of idiots in CSGO who don't who's like like amazed to find out that women exist and play games?
Yeah, right. I think even though it's like getting better, you're still gonna have people that say that stuff just as a joke or as a meme, and it's just tiring. It's just
Yeah.
So in League of Legends, you can sit there and play by yourself, which is fun, and you know, well, fun. But also just all of my friends from uni, like that's how I met them, and I think part of the reason why I still play the game now is just to spend time with them, and mess around, I guess. I don't think I take it as seriously as I used to.
One thing I found is like that the barrier to entry, at least from my perspective, seems to be quite high, because there's So I don't know if it is it heroes or champions or characters. What do you call them in League? I don't know, because it's champions. Different to champions, right? Yeah. Okay, then it'll be heroes in Dota, right? But yeah. Like it's there's so many of those to learn, and then there's so many different compositions you can have for teams.
Yeah.
I know there are three lanes, right? And I know there's five people on each team, yeah. and that's about it. And I don't know how much time I've spent watching, but it feels like enough to a point where I should have a better understanding of what's going on. It feels like you perhaps I'm speaking from a place of ignorance, obviously, because I haven't. I haven't even installed the game before, but it feels to me like you have to have played it and put in a significant amount of time to even understand what's going on. And with that in mind, it really surprises me that League of Legends is so big, considering that caveat, where you can kind of watch CSGO and get an understanding of what's going on after a couple of matches.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's going for it is that it attracts a lot of people through word of mouth. Like your friends will be playing it, so you pick up the game, not necessarily because you're super interested in it, but to play with friends or to play with someone that you know that plays it. And because of that kind of driving factor, you're more willing to put time into it. I don't think it's necessarily a game where you would think, you would see it and think, I really want to learn how to play League of Legends, if you don't know anyone that plays the game, I guess.
Yeah.
Or you don't have anyone to play with, it's a bit of a time sink in that sense if you just decide to pick it up by yourself. But definitely CSGO is a much lower barrier to entry, much easier as a kind of spectator spectator thing to get into. And I think that's why it's a lot easier for brands coming into the space as well to see kind of CSGO as a major esport title that is still kind of easier to understand compared to League of Legends. But then again, obviously, stuff like football or basketball, kind of similar esports to those like NBA and FIFA, kind of being slightly more attractive because they're easy to understand.
Yeah.
But with those, obviously, you suffer from them not being as kind of esportsy, I guess.
I know what you're saying, yeah. They're more like sports simulators, aren't they, as opposed to like fully fledged games that stand on their own. So no, it's just as I say, me coming from a place of ignorance and kind of wanting to understand. Like to me, people say like Dota seems a lot more complicated than League. Like I've tried to watch both and they both seem exactly the same game to me. That's the level of ignorance I'm on, you know, like, besides they've got some different characters going and that, and like the colors are a little bit different, I can't tell the difference. So like, I've never understood it, and like I would love to understand the full appeal, you know, obviously, like, considering League is like the almost the flagship title of the industry, and on with you saying that that's how you started and you still play it, I just wanted to ask that. But we'll go back onto a bit more of a serious topic now. And I think we've established that I'll just never like League of Legends.
It's a good game. If you want to play, you can add me, and then maybe it'll be more fun if you play with someone that plays the game.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be fun for you having me on your team.
That's fine.
So, as more money comes into the industry, we're obviously seeing some people's pockets get much fatter, right? But is that the case too for say, like, so you work with influencers the most, right? So would you say that's similar for influencers and I guess broadcast talent and stuff from your experience there as well? Like, is it trickling down or is it just sticking in the CEO's pockets?
So in terms of broadcast talent, I'd say that if you kind of, I wouldn't say that necessarily they're getting more money. It's not necessarily affecting what they get. Maybe they get paid like slightly more now, and I think over the next few years you'll probably see kind of them being rewarded slightly more financially. I think the main thing is that they're getting so much more opportunity, and kind of more guaranteed work will obviously lead to kind of more pay over the course of a year,
right?
With more events coming up, and like multiple leagues and stuff. Whereas if you were to kind of wind the clock back about 5 years, probably there were nowhere near as many events that they could then get hired for.
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of one of the plus sides of seeing more investment come into the industry, is you're getting more opportunity. But I think something to note is that, you know, just because more investment is coming in doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to then, you know, a broadcast analyst, they're going to be like, well, I now want to be paid X amount. Because typically they'll have, you know, a standard rate that they charge, and that depends more on their reputation and their portfolio, as opposed to how much money there is in the industry.
Right.
And that's kind of the same with influencers. I mean, they have their own kind of rates that will rise and fall depending on how they do themselves, you know, how they kind of stack up to other influencers, how well their, if it's YouTubers, for example, their kind of subscriber to view ratio. I don't really think that the investment itself is necessarily then going into the pockets of these people. It's just making, as I said, more opportunity, and then just having an effect that way.
Okay, so say I run an, oh no, so say you run an agency, right? And and I'm a tournament operator.
Yeah.
Okay, and I need to hire one more person. I need a really good analyst, and say you've got, I don't know, say you've got Sponge and Thorin, for example, right? Signed to yourselves. How and they both want this gig, right? And I'm happy to have either of them. Like, what's the process there? Like, how the hell do you decide which one gets it? Is it a fight to the death? Whoever gets paid less is going to be accepted by myself? Like, how does that go? Because I've never really thought about it too much, but I mean, I imagine that can be a real problem.
Yeah, it's something that's tricky. Again, I'm lucky that I don't have to deal with stuff like that.
Yeah.
Most of the time, if not all the time, both of them will get pitched to the tournament organizer, and it's very rare that the TO will then not have a preference. Obviously, if they have two very different profiles as people and their rates have always been very different, you wouldn't then change the rate for them to be exactly the same so that it's, I don't know, a completely even choice, because that's not really how it works. So I think that it's very rare that we're in the situation where it's like we have to choose who is the person that gets hired, because as I said, the TO will typically know who they want.
Okay, well, Sponge is going to charge a lot less, Andy's a lot less edgy than Thorin. So what you're saying is I would pick Thorin in that in that situation, you know. But yeah, so it makes sense. Like, everyone's kind of got their own level,
yeah.
And like, it just depends who fits in there. I was just imagining a scenario where, like, yeah, there's one spot and you were repping both,
yeah.
both people. Like, it could be a bit of a complication there, but as you say, there's a bit more nuance to it there.
Yeah. It's a bit more nuanced, but then, you know, you still want to be give your talent as equal opportunities as possible. And I think that the good thing for agencies is most of the time it's not up to us to kind of choose one of our sons or daughters to go out to one of these things. Usually, yeah, the TO will have a preference.
Fair play. So you mentioned earlier about public speaking becoming more and more of a thing for yourself. Like, how does that develop? Because I've kind of got it on my wish list for something to do this year, I guess. Like, I don't think I'm particularly great at speaking, but it's something that I would like to do because it shits me up and I kind of want to get out of my comfort zone. Because, like, yeah, like, yeah. I wasn't particularly comfortable starting out doing this podcast, for example. Like, looking into a camera and speaking into a microphone, like, is very, like, unnatural to me. And as you say, like, it was quite nerve-wracking for you. So how did you get into that, and what kind of opportunities have you taken so far with public speaking?
So I had to at university, for example, we had like group projects and stuff like that, which required you speaking in front of a class. And even that used to really, really scare me. I felt very uncomfortable, didn't like everyone looking at me as I was trying to say stuff that I hoped was intelligent. But towards kind of the end of my master's, I started enjoying it more, or at least getting less scared by it. And that being rewarded by my lecturers and my professors taking notice of it and being like, would you like to come back and speak next year to like this year's students? Oh, dying over there.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, all good. Very, very sorry about that.
No worries. Ah. I got a lot more comfortable speaking to people my age, mm-hmm. and my kind of first public speaking gig, I guess, was going back to my uni to speak to the next year of your students about my job, which, I mean, it's quite hard to go wrong if you're just speaking about yourself.
How did you find that though? Like, having going back, did you feel a bit more comfortable considering you'd already spoken there? Or,
I mean, I think people or my close friends will know that I was absolutely terrified. I was so nervous. I felt sick. I was just like, oh God, it's going to be awful. Just stressing about it for about a week before.
Really? A week?
There. Yeah, a week. Couldn't sleep. but I went there. I spoke a bit with the professor that invited me back. And he was so keen to know about esports because pretty much none of my professors knew anything about esports, or they were like, but that's not a sport. And getting into that kind of discussion, which I didn't really want to have anyway.
Yeah.
And he was, his kind of enthusiasm, I guess, made it a lot easier to then go in with the mindset of, well, some people are going to enjoy this and I enjoy talking about it.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be fine. And yeah, I was lucky that there were so many people that were interested to know about esports, even if they cared like very, very little about gaming or never heard of esports in their life. I think it just helps to kind of start off at that. I'd been in that room before. I had spoken with professors that were watching before. It wasn't a complete room of strangers. So that was fine. And then I think it's like, even though I'm really, really nervous, afterwards I get a massive, like, kind of come down from the adrenaline rush, but
right.
not in a bad way, in a very, like, oh, I feel so fulfilled. I did it. I kind of went out of my comfort zone. Like, as you said, kind mm-hmm. of doing it is one of the things you want to do to get out of your comfort zone. And then since then, did some talks at Deloitte, which were
and
more
and what's
scary.
That, what's that for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, it's they do kind of a tech, media and telecoms predictions event, and also quite a few kind of smaller events for people in tech or people that are interested in investing,
right.
That want to know about kind of key rising industries. and one of the things that they were really interested in was esports.
And they picked you out of everyone who knows about esports. That's an achievement, right?
Well, I got in touch with Code Red, so and then I was the chosen one.
You
So
made yourself an influencer for that, negotiated a rate of
yeah,
zero and was in.
I
There you
was
go.
like, well, so yeah, maybe I should have been like, if you pay me an extra, if you pay, well, to be honest, I'll take the free food if they're giving me free
I'll
food at
do
the
that,
event.
yeah. Always take free food.
Yeah, but also, I mean, it's again, it's like a really good networking opportunity, and it's a good way to kind of make other people that don't know about esports excited about the industry. And yeah, so those are kind of my kind of journeys into kind of the public speaking world. It's still something that I get nervous about. So I think if if you make a go of it this year, then I think if you're not nervous at all, then congratulations,
There's
and I'm
something
very
wrong with
jealous.
you if you're not nervous
Oh
at
yeah,
all,
there might be
right?
something wrong with you. But then, yeah, it's very normal, I think, if you continue to get nervous. I
Right,
think you'll be like
so
that for a while.
you speak to people, right? Every day, okay? And you know what you're talking about, right? I'm assuming that at least. It seems like you know what you're talking about, right? So what is it about getting in front of people who you speak to every day and speaking about the things you know about? What is it that's the nerve-wracking there, do you think?
I think it's just kind of being the authority in the room on a subject makes me worry that I'm going to say the wrong thing. I don't know. I think I just didn't like being the center of attention when I was younger. And yeah, just a bit of a stage fright type thing, I
Right.
guess. Once I start talking, I feel way more confident and relaxed. It's just the kind of thought of everyone staring at me, which
Yeah.
makes me a bit nervous.
So will you be doing more in the future if the opportunities arise?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to. I've got some stuff lined up over the
Okay.
next few months. Not nothing like major, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I want to do. Hopefully, get over my nerves. But yeah, once I'm talking, it's fine. I feel in my zone, so.
Well,
Yeah, I'm
I've got a
excited
bit
to
of
hear what you've
advice.
got.
I've got
Yeah, go for it.
if you started a podcast, right, you would get over a lot of those nerves, I reckon. Like, when it comes to it, because like, and I know it doesn't feel like it when you're putting out on the internet, but there are infinitely more people on the internet who can watch you speak rather than like a room full of maybe 40, 50 people or whatever. Like, so like, if you feel nervous at that point, maybe that would actually eradicate it. Like, how nervous have you been throughout this actually, when we got speaking? Were you really nervous or?
When you're like, okay, we're gonna start now, I was like, oh no. But yeah, I'm fine now. It's just like chatting with a friend,
That's
so
what I'm saying. Like, it's not too bad, and I guess. Yeah, as you said, like at uni, for example, if you've got people that you already know, then that makes it much easier. So, as you say, networking is important. So, if you find somebody at one of these events you're speaking at and get to know them a bit more beforehand, that actually might help as well. So, I'm gonna write that down for myself. Like, not that I'm gonna get any opportunities, but I'm just like obviously I work for Esports Insider and we run events. Like, if they're not gonna let me speak at all, then I've got no hope anywhere, have I? Like, let's be real. I haven't asked them, but they haven't asked me similarly. So I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna be at these events just in the corner watching people speak,
I'll
because
write about other people speaking.
I know it's. I'll be honest, it's the most depressing thing. Going to an event, right, and then having to write about the people speaking when it's like, well, I know what they're talking about isn't anything special a lot of the time, you know. Like there's a lot of people who know a lot of things right now. So and a lot of the times, the kind of the talks are aimed at people with lesser knowledge, obviously, who maybe don't even know esports at all. So I don't know. Yeah, just kind of.
Out there the next ESI event, you'll be on the kind of speaking
I don't
order.
th the
I
next the
expect.
next one's ESI New York. That's the thing. Like, you catch me
Excuse
in.
me, go to New
Well, I'm hoping. I'm pretty sure I'm going there. But I mean, like, I don't think I'm the person you want to put in front of a bunch of like uptight Americans. I'm gonna be completely honest with you.
Well, it'll be a good kind of starting point for you. Maximum level, and then everything else afterwards will be easy.
I'll just have to try and cut down on my swearing. But that's incredibly difficult. Like, I recorded with Cheddar Esports yesterday. And I don't even know their policy on swearing, but like I was so
throwing them in.
It was the opposite. I was like so scared to say anything in case I just swore and they couldn't use it or they had to beep out or something. Like, because I'm who I am, and I never think twice about it. No matter where I am, I could be at a funeral, I'm still going to be myself and not reserved, you know. Which is obviously not necessarily a helpful thing at times, but that may go in my favor if it came to like public speaking. But like being on like Cheddar Esports, like speaking there, like that actually was the nerve wracking thing. It was like, oh shit, what if I slip up and say shit like I just said then, when not even thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like it's an interesting thing, but. But yeah, I guess like every time you go up and speak in front of people, like hopefully that makes it a little bit easier the next time. You know, and I mean, you're as you say, you're becoming like the authority or an authority on the topic you're discussing. So hopefully that presents more opportunities for yourselves going forward if you do a decent enough job. And you obviously have if you've got more coming up, you know. So you should like take a look back and think, oh wow, I've done those and I didn't melt into a puddle. I didn't completely crumble. I did it and got a good reception afterwards, and I'm doing more in the future. That's inherently a positive thing, right?
I think the other thing is that it feels very, very rewarding when people that, I don't know, like you get 50-year-old, I don't know, bankers coming up to you and being like, I was so interested by esports and now I really want to know more, and they ask so many questions and they're not coming in with a bias necessarily. They're coming in and actually wanting to know more because of you kind of exciting them with what you've said about the industry. I think that's something that really makes me happy about doing it and excited to do more of them. And I think that kind of having I think it's just a good feeling to see esports be more widely accepted and see people not coming at it with a very kind of wrong view.
I know some people find esports an attack or something, where it's like, no, it's something to be embraced as opposed to be afraid of. Like we see all traditional sports coming in, like trying to come into the space. Is not very natural and authentic yet, but like you can see they're having to embrace esports because that's seemingly what the future is, and that's what so many people are banking on at least. But we're getting towards the hour mark. It's gone fast. So what I would do is I will wrap things up. I just want to say continue killing it at Code Red. You obviously are, like, new title at the beginning of the year. That's a very good sign. So just keep it up there. Keep influencing the influencers. And also good luck with the public speaking. Like for me, you know what you're on about, and you're good at speaking, you're engaging, so that's a really good sign, and I hope it continues to get better and grow for you in terms of opportunities.
Thank you, Adam. And likewise.
I'm nowhere near your level. I can only aspire. But so thank you for coming on. Where can people find you if they want to online? Or would you prefer for them not to?
You can come find me. I'm happy to chat always. You can find me at Mitsuko on Twitter. I got that good handle.
There you go.
Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm pretty much the only Mitsuko on LinkedIn, so it should be pretty easy to find me. And yeah, just drop me a message. I'm happy to chat.
There we go. Well, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time. And thank you to anybody who's watched on YouTube or listened on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher. I don't know all of them. It's on like 10 different platforms at this point. But yeah, so thank you for tuning in. This is episode 10. That's the first 10 done. Hopefully there's been an improvement in quality as time goes on. So this will be the best yet. That's the goal at least. And I will catch you on the next episode. Cheers.